Hey guys, and welcome to this week's On the Trail podcast with Jared Stansberry and Adam Gray. Stay tuned. You'll get your inside look at the current going-ons within Iowa State athletics, specifically recruiting. But before we start the show, here's a shout-out to our sponsor, The Exercise Coach, that's located down on Mill Civic Parkway in West Des Moines. The Exercise Coach, it's changing the way that you think about fitness. Achieve the results that you want, no matter what they are, with these two 20-minute workouts per week. Now, hey, let's jump on the trail. Here are your hosts, Jared Stansberry and Adam Gray.
Welcome to another edition of On the Trail. I'm Jared Stansberry, joined as always by Adam Gray. On the Trail is brought to you by our good friends at The Exercise Coach in West Des Moines. Check them out on Facebook. Check them out online, The Exercise Coach. They know what they're doing.
They do. How you doing, Jared?
Good. How you doing, Adam?
Doing well. Excited for a big basketball game on Thursday.
Yeah. Are you ready to go on the bus?
I'm ready. We got a full bus. We're taking up 55 Cyclone fans to be screaming there in Carver Hawkeye Arena. And
you guys will have like 1/10 of the attendance.
Oh, come on now. It'll be full. I mean, there might be a couple empty seats, but it'll be full.
Did you see their attendance at the game against Stetson last night?
Yeah, but Stetson's not Iowa State. It's not a Cyhawk week.
It wasn't even full the last time Iowa State went there, was it?
I don't remember. I'm not saying there might not be some empty spots, but for the most part, it's going to be full. And Iowa State fans, it sounds like they're buying up some tickets.
It sounds like the student section is what their biggest problem usually is, filling it up.
Yeah, but a Thursday, 7 o'clock game, Cyhawk.
I think even when the last time Iowa State was there, I don't think the student section was full.
Why not? You know, that's always typically a problem. During the Greg McDermott years for Iowa State, too, I mean,
hell, that's a problem for Iowa State now sometimes.
Is the students?
Yeah.
Yeah, students are – they're always the wild card, right?
Yeah.
But they typically – Iowa State students are great, and they always show up for the big games.
What better do you have to do? What better things do you have to do on a Thursday night? Nothing.
Thursday nights in Iowa City are fun, buddy.
I
can tell you a couple things that they probably are doing.
Of course you would, you degenerate.
Yeah, no, so I'm excited about it. We'll take the bus out, maybe have a couple cocktails on the way there, and then, of course, some celebratory drinks afterwards.
Sorry, I'm just going to watch Miracle on 34th Street. You can just do the podcast.
No. All right, so what do we got to talk about this week?
Got some official visitors this weekend. A handful. Literally a handful. 5 of them. So
nice.
Yeah, right on, a handful.
Who's number one on your list?
Well, Caleb Chandler.
Yep.
He'll be here. Obviously, former Iowa State commit. This will be his first time in Ames since June, which led to his commitment.
He was here for a camp. He didn't camp himself.
No, he didn't camp, but he was just here watching, experiencing. It'll be pretty big to get him on campus, I'd say. It sounds like Tom Manning has been almost doing everything that he can besides living outside of Caleb Chandler's house in his car.
I find this to be like an interesting week to bring people in. I understand if you're trying to get a kid maybe who's going to be a December signee to get him in here for an official visit.
Yeah.
But guys that won't be signed until February, why not try to get him in here for a weekend in January where, you know, they can watch an Iowa State game and see kind of the experience of, you know, Hilton Magic and what the Iowa State fan base is all about. Why do you think they're bringing him in here this week as, you know, opposed to in January?
I don't know. It's probably just when it worked out for him to come.
That's a question I'm going to ask the staff when I get a chance. I'm going to ask what the reason is. Maybe they want to split it up so they can get more one-on-one time with each of these guys.
That makes sense.
Or maybe they know that these guys are nearing a decision, a couple of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just played in a game last weekend. I don't know if it was a state championship or what it was. But Iowa State was there, and I'm sure they're just trying to keep in front of him as much as they can as early as possible.
Because he's got big-time offers. I mean, he's got offers from some SEC schools, ACC. It would be big to get him back on board and hopefully a couple more offensive linemen. I think we got, one or two other offensive linemen visiting?
Yeah, there's two other offensive linemen. Connor Robbins is a 3-star offensive tackle from St. Lauderdale, Florida. St. Augustine. Sorry, St. Augustine, Florida.
That's a big boy.
Yeah,
he's 6'8", 6'9", 320, 330 pounds.
Rashawn Salaam, dad. He's like 6'8". I think he's 6'8", 325.
That's a big boy.
As a high school senior.
You get him in a Big 12 weight room right there. You never know. Like, you know, does he have bend? Is he tough? Does he play with the mean streak? You don't know, but you got to love the measurables right there off the bat.
Right. I talked to him just the other day. He told me that Iowa State and South Florida are the two schools that he's focused on right now.
Okay.
So
South Florida's had a good year. I think they're just inside the top 25 right now.
Yeah, they went 10-2.
And that's a school that's not very far from his home either. So two things Iowa State's going up against there. But I think you got to look at Iowa State's depth chart if you're him and realize he could probably play pretty early on. Not as a true freshman, I wouldn't think. But, you know, redshirt, maybe freshman, redshirt sophomore year. So that's got to be enticing for him.
Caleb Chandler's got to be a guy that could think he could come in and play, though.
Potentially. I hope not. I mean,
I feel like he – yeah, you hope not. But I would say if – like, you're trying to sell that to him. Like, there is that potential if you come in and prove yourself.
There
you could,
is, yeah.
You
know? Well, hopefully the next offensive lineman you're going to mention could come in here and shore up some things in the offensive line to where we don't have to play a true freshman.
Yeah, and that's grad transfer from Miami, Hunter Knighton. He was a reserve tackle for the Hurricanes this season. Sounds like he's going to be here for a visit as well.
And not killing Iowa State's offensive line right now, but a reserve tackle from Miami probably would have been starting on our offensive line this last year. I think what Manning and the whole staff did on that offensive line to get it as productive as they could with what they had was incredible. So you put a guy like that, I bet if he comes in to Iowa State, if Iowa State's able to get a commitment out of him, you won't see him play tackle. They'll probably move him to guard.
Well, I was just going to say, I'd read a couple different things that said that he was maybe – he'd moved all different around. I think the Miami coaches had him at like every position during the season.
Yep.
Just one after another.
Kind of that utility player a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's nice. You can put him anywhere.
But I think he's more natural on the inside.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's like, Nick Fett. You know, we had to move him around a little bit. But with Campos coming back and you got
Sean Foster,
you kind of hoping you have your tackles set.
JP Filbert's been tweeting like he's going to come back. Did you see that?
No, I have not seen that. Really?
Yeah, I think he tweeted it like one day and then he might have deleted it. But
that would be interesting. Iowa State has been very quiet about the whole JB Filbert. You know, whether he's off the team
there was
or
a
not.
Couple different people that kind of went off the map quietly.
Who was another?
Well, like Bobby Leith was still on the roster Bobby for Leith. Most of the season. Yep. Then last week 2 weeks ago he got arrested.
Oh,
and
he
then
did?
When somebody asked for comment, Campbell said he hasn't been on the team since August.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was the guy at the end of last year was a decent football player for Iowa State.
Right.
He came in as a junior college player, so that one probably hurt a little bit too. But, yeah, Filbert, people almost forget about him. The guy started the first, three games of the year this year as a left tackle, and then he got kicked off, essentially.
I don't want to start a rumor that J.B. Filbert's coming back. Like, I don't know that that's true, but I just saw on Twitter that he was alluding to the fact that it was a possibility.
That'd be very surprising to me.
Yeah, it would be very surprising to me as well. He was essentially suspended for 10 games.
Yeah.
Like who's? Well, I wonder when the last time somebody got suspended for 10 games and then came back.
Yeah, and not 10 games for like an academic issue or failing
like
a drug test for being a jerk.
I was just going to say 10 games essentially for being a douche.
Yeah, yeah. So that would be quite surprising if he made it back. But if he did come back, I wonder if they would keep him at one of the tackle spots or if they'd move him inside too.
I can't wait for the day when some of the things that – excuse you. Some of the things that happened with that whole situation come to light.
I doubt they ever do, publicly. I mean, you might hear some stuff.
Eventually, CW, I hope, will tell his story, his J.P. Filbert story. Do you remember that?
I remember the J.P. Filbert story.
After CW wrote that they were the worst offensive line in Iowa State history?
Yeah, that story he might have to wait about 3 years before he tells that story. You got to wait until he's gone, long gone. Yeah, you know what, though? Iowa State cannot be picky as far as bodies. They need bodies here. If you look at the recruiting that they did for, the 2012 to 2014 season on the offensive line, it's terrible. I mean, it's awful. It's amazing that they were even able to move the ball up and down the field at times this year. So they cannot be picky as far as who they go get. Now, they can be as far as high school kids, right? They want to go get good high school kids. But anybody looking and saying, well, this Hunter Knighton kid, I mean, sure, he is at Miami. That's a good football program, but he was a backup. Well, I want a backup.
Yeah.
We can't be picking. We need bodies. We need bodies that have played at this level.
Well, there's no depth, and even the depth that you have isn't quality.
No.
And that this is just what I don't get with the Rhodes. I don't know if it's their talent evaluation. I don't know if it's just they flat out just missed on some guys that maybe looked better in high school than they turned out to be. Or they maybe missed on some personalities or something like that. But it's like, how can some of these guys be so completely irrelevant, complete non-contributors as juniors?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. For the guys that are not hurt and have never played and got passed up on by walk-ons and by guys that were on the defensive line till the middle of the year and they brought them in, those guys were just – they missed them in talent evaluation, right? Then you have other guys like a Jacob Dunning who could not play just because of injuries or a – you know, Burton should have been, you know, Burton should have been our best offensive lineman this year, mm-hmm. right? But he didn't play because of injuries. So there are certain instances where the Rhodes coaching staff probably shouldn't take a ton of blame. But even after that Burton class, for about 2 or 3 years, the offensive line recruiting was terrible.
Yeah.
Just terrible. So, yeah, they that's the one thing everybody needs to kind of calm down, I think, with Campbell and the staff for next year. Everyone's excited about the offense, and the pieces are in place with Park and Lazard and the running backs that we have. But you still got to have an offensive line. It'll be interesting to see who they can go get to fill those holes.
Definitely. It'll be interesting to see what kind of numbers they end up with there, too, by the end of the class.
I bet you it's closer to 30 than people think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I think, and then there'll be some attrition. There always is, especially mm-hmm. when a new coaching staff, too, you know. But they got to balance out these classes a little bit, too.
I think we'll start hearing about some of that stuff maybe here in the next couple weeks. Probably next week.
About a couple guys leaving?
Yeah, because there's going to be a dead period that starts here soon.
Did you see what, and maybe I misunderstood what Lazard said, but when somebody asked him, hey, will you now be trying to recruit some players that are here right now that are thinking about leaving? Will you be trying to recruit them to stay? So on and so forth. And he basically just said, well, you know, I'd like them to be here and everything, but if they want to leave, they can just go ahead and leave.
He said, please leave.
Please
if
leave.
If you don't want to be here, then please leave. Yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting.
I like that.
I love it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like it seems like Lazard maybe has taken that step as far as I'm great attitude.
Yeah.
And get on, like, this is the level we're going to be at. Because Lazard's always been a very nice kid, right? And a great talent, but he never had that kind of a little bit of a dickheadishness to him, right? Mm-hmm. Which that comment is, I agree with, but it is a little dickheadish, right? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So I liked it too. I wonder if that's something that the coaching staff is kind of instilling into the team and into him. And now it's, hey, this is our goals. This is where we're going to be. If you don't want to be here, please leave. Get out.
Right.
I thought it was interesting.
I mean, if you have those guys that are in your program that obviously aren't completely bought in, they're not all in. To use a Paul Rhodes.
What am I going
to
do with this all in?
I was going to say, to use a Paul Rhodes slogan. If you're not all in, that's how you get the division that I think that they had here the last couple of years. You know what I mean? Where it's like there's like cliques in the team. But when you can get everybody is one. Everybody wants to be there. Then you know that it's you're less likely to have one of those situations where you've got just one bad apple that's kind of feeding into other people.
Well, I mean, I think even Rhodes, I mean, I think he wanted the same thing that we're just talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he didn't want it.
It's easier said than done. I think what it is, though, is, hey, this is where we are going to be as a program, and everyone needs to be on the same page doing the same thing. Otherwise,
You're gone,
or we're going to leave you behind. And we saw from guys this year, right, that we thought were going to be good players, maybe played early on, that they just kind of got left behind. Mike Warren, one of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Warren, all of a sudden, he went from being the guy, ran for 1,300 yards last year. People thought he was an all-Big 12 player. He wasn't at the caliber that they wanted him to be as far as in practice, and he got left behind. I think Mike Warren's got a chance to come back next year and be a good player for Iowa State, but he's got to get on the level that Campbell and the staff expects everyone to be at. There's no favorites, and I love that. I think that's good.
Well, I mean, you think about even Bobby Leith, like you said, he was a guy that was contributing last year.
He wasn't even on the 105-man roster going into fall camp. I thought it was.
They literally didn't bring him to fall camp.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
Damon Tucker and Bobby Leith. I thought those were going to be your two starting guys, and then all of a sudden, didn't even play a game, not one game.
It was Vernell Trent.
Vernell actually did a pretty good job for Iowa State by the end of the year.
I don't think there was any moment where I was like, oh my gosh, the defensive line is the reason that they're losing this game, you know?
Uh-huh.
Or like they're just getting absolutely owned on the defensive line and that's just killing them. I don't remember a moment like that. Maybe Iowa. That might be the only time.
Yeah, yeah, Iowa. And, you know, linebackers could have played a little bit better too.
Yeah.
You know, it was a mixture of everyone up front.
Speaking of linebackers, this Shannon Reed is announcing on Wednesday.
That'd be a nice get.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's between us and a couple other schools down south.
Tennessee, I think.
Tennessee?
Yeah.
I heard the staff's going to visit him, too, trying to do, like, one last just mm-hmm. all-out blitz to get him.
Yeah.
This would be big time. He's a mid-year guy?
Yeah, I believe so.
You know my feelings on linebackers. I know we play the 4-2-5 primarily, and we don't need as many linebackers as maybe years past when we were on the 4-3 or 3-4, but I still think our linebackers are not where they need to be, mm-hmm. and we could use a huge, huge talent upgrade there. So I already like Orion Vance, like Jake Hummel a lot. Getting a guy like Shannon Reed would be huge. If not Shannon Reed, I know we got another kid coming in this weekend.
Well, it was – Andrew Ward. Sorry, that's good. That was a nice segue.
That's what I do, man.
Andrew Ward, I don't have his ratings in front of me, but I think he's from Michigan.
He's from Michigan, a three-star, solid, yeah. solid recruit.
He had an offer from Michigan, didn't he?
I don't think so.
No?
I think he was waiting for an offer from the in-state schools. If he got one from Michigan, maybe he didn't commit in time and he lost that spot. I don't know. But, I'll pull up his stuff right here. He's 6'1", about 200 pounds. So, you know, good size, not great. Virginia Tech, Nebraska, Arizona, Central Michigan, those are the kind of the schools that it lists besides Iowa State is going after him. I think he already visited Nebraska in September. He's coming to Iowa State this weekend. And I don't think he has anything planned for Virginia Tech yet. Penn State offered him. I mean, so this kid's got good offers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so that'll be another good one to watch. It'll be interesting to see where they go with those linebackers. I mean, if they can get Shannon Reed, they're going to be in a good position there.
Yeah.
Especially with those three guys. If you get Andrew Ward, that's just like a cherry on top.
Yeah, and I think you don't turn down. I don't think you turn him down.
Right.
I think you go get him.
I wanted to say it was interesting when we were talking to Jeff Woody about Jake Hummel, and so, I mean he made a point that I don't think either one of us really even thought of, where it's like the reason that his stats weren't any better at Dowling this season is the fact that they forced people to go three and out like every time that they were on the field.
Less plays, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really even think about that.
So people listen too. Jeff also pointed out. Jeff said he was bored one day. He went through and was watching video of all our commits.
Yeah.
And he really liked Hummel. He thought he kind of reminded him a lot of AJ Klein,
mm-hmm.
who obviously is playing in the NFL for Carolina Panthers. So not a bad comparison at all. I remember when he committed to Iowa State, I talked to a guy who was a coach there who said this kid is the best. You know, one of the best players they've had there, and he thought he's going to be a stud at Iowa State too. So he just, you know, he's a local guy. He committed early on, so he's the forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of forget about him. I think that's what you typically do. We get excited talking about the Caleb Chandlers and the Andrew Wards and the Shannon Reeds because we're trying to get them to commit to us again. But if players commit early on, we forget about them, don't we?
Yeah.
So
I think people even forget about like Josh Johnson sometimes.
Josh, our quarterback.
Yeah. Devin Moore.
People barely talk about him. You're always in recruiting. Fans are always this way. They're always worried about who can you get next or trying to keep someone. Like right now, Iowa State's going to be fighting like hell to keep Cam White.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe a couple of these.
Well, it's kind of like even with basketball when, you know, they got Terrence Lewis, they got Darius McNeil, and then everybody, all they wanted to know was when's Lindell going to come.
When's Lindell?
What's up with Lindell? Well, okay, Lindell, they got him. Now, all people cared about was Stokes,
yep.
which we can talk about that situation too.
Oh, man. That's a weird situation, isn't it?
Yeah, no kidding.
I called it, though, by the way.
That he's going to Florida?
No, when the whole thing came out, and I said, well, he probably did sign with them. But
Yeah.
But, that's just weird. I don't blame the kid for doing it. I want to know, how did that get out, though? How did, when Isaiah Stokes commits to Florida and he keeps it under wraps, who breaks the story and why?
Like, well, that day that it started to, like, leak out.
Yeah.
Would have been 2 weeks since the end of the signing period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, like, it has to have been through the conference office within 2 weeks after the letter's
sense.
Been signed or okay. something like that. So I think that I've heard that some people think it was somebody in the conference office leaked it out. There's other people that say it might have been a school. But from what I've been told, a lot of the schools were completely blindsided by the fact that he had done this.
Yeah.
So
that's the weird part.
Yeah.
Right? Because obviously the Iowa State coaching staff can't go out and say, hey, this kid, he committed, and we wouldn't have known public knowledge. So why would you not tell the other coaches, and obviously Florida knows,
mm-hmm.
and just keep it quiet if you want to wait and tell your family on Christmas? I think that's okay. I think it's weird when you're still letting those coaches recruit you and you're going to their games and tweeting out and retweeting Iowa State fans.
Yeah.
That gets a little weird. I mean, I'm not hurt over
well,
it.
Well, why not?
Fine, but
if you're going to do that, why not just commit and then sign in the spring? But just, like, shut down your recruiting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. For all, he seems like a good kid, right?
Yeah.
And he was one that did not play up the recruiting process at all. He was not doing interviews for a lot of people. So I don't think this was him trying to, feel the love, so to speak. I think he really just wanted to have a nice surprise on Christmas for his family. It just kind of – it probably backfired a little bit on him.
Yeah, it was just – I don't think he thought it through very well.
In today's age, I mean, if this happened – 5-10 years ago,
it would work.
It would have worked.
Yeah,
it can't work in today's world. It just can't. And it would work if you were a lousy recruit going to I shouldn't say lousy recruit. That sounds bad. If you are not a four-star recruit, if you are less going to a lesser school, you could probably get away with it, right? But when you're four-star and you're being offered by Florida and Iowa State.
I would have thought that Florida even would have thought that was a little fishy, though. Like, the way he was acting supposedly after he'd signed his letter of intent and have Iowa State still sniffing around. And
because before that, when Iowa State was recruiting him, he wasn't retweeting a lot of Iowa State stuff, was he?
No, I don't. Not that I remember.
So it was kind of almost like all
of a sudden. He was still even retweeting Tennessee stuff. Like, it's not like it was just Iowa State.
That's the weird part of it. To me, just don't retweet any of this stuff. But you know what? The kid's 17, 18 years old. I mean, it happens. Whatever. But that was one of the more odd recruiting stories I can remember in recent years. There's been some weird ones, you know, where kids commit to a school and then the coaches, I've never even heard of this kid before.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
For sure.
Did you ever do that? Did you send in your – did Doc Sadler at Nebraska, did you send in your
– commitment?
Yeah, commitment, signed letter of intent to him.
I did not. No.
It says I got a 6'8 power forward from Clarinda, Iowa. Where the hell's Clarinda, Iowa? That's what Doc would have said.
I don't know if he would have known me by name, but I did go to a camp and work out for them, though.
Did you?
Yeah. So I think – and he did talk to me at the camp, so he might have actually known who I was, but he might not know my name.
Okay.
Because when he came to Iowa State, the first time I worked for Cyclone Fanatic, I went to Media Day, Basketball Media Day, and I went up to him, and he said, "What the hell are you doing here?"
Well, good to see you too, Doc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Then the last guy I've got written down here is Richard Bowens. He'll take his official visit this weekend. Obviously a commit.
So Richard Bowens – another guy I committed early to that I think fans forget about, but he's an intriguing prospect because he's a cornerback. Did they put him at cornerback or did they put him at safety? Where do you think they'll put him?
I bet he'll play cornerback.
And the kid, I'm trying to pull up his size here. He's what, 6 feet, 6 feet, 6'1" maybe? And he runs he's fast.
Well, he's a three-time state champion in the 300 hurdles in Michigan. He's the fastest 300 hurdler in Michigan history.
So the guy's got speed. He's 6'1". I mean, to me, it seems like Iowa State got a steal on this kid. Like, you get him up there, get some good coaching with him with his size and speed, there's no reason to believe this kid can't be a really good football player for Iowa State.
Well, I'm just I'm going to wait to see whether or not Matt Campbell's going to be able to keep Martin Smith away from him, keep him off the track team. Because he's that fast.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he had scholarship offers from, like, everybody to go run track, too.
Well, why can't he? I mean, to me, that – he'd stay in good shape, right?
Yeah.
Like he should be able to do both.
But can't you miss – wouldn't you miss spring football then? Especially for the events that he runs.
You can't do both?
I mean, you can, but I don't think they do – they don't do the hurdles like that in indoor. So
I gotcha. I don't know. I don't know. I guess I don't know how the schedule
– I don't know how that – yeah, I don't know how that works really, but I'm just spitballing.
So he's in for his official visit. He's been committed since way back in April. He was back when Iowa State was getting like a commitment every 2 days.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice to get him on in a visit. But any other kids that are coming into town this weekend?
Josh Johnson told me that he might be coming on an unofficial last week, but I haven't followed up with him yet this week, so I'm not 100% sure on that.
And he is an early sign?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, he's not. He's not.
He's not. We thought he was for a while, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that he is.
He's not. Okay. That's huge. If you can ever get a kid in early, especially JUCO kids, but high school kids too, that a position of need, you know, if we get a linebacker here, it's an early grad, I think they'd have a really good chance of playing early next year.
For sure. Hunter Knighton, the kid from Miami, is an early grad. He would be here in January if he commits to Iowa State.
And see, that'd be big as far as getting him in here,
right,
acclimated with the team. And I've got to think, this is my guess, Campos is going to be tackle. Foster will be a tackle. They'll put Julian Good-Jones from tackle into center because he was going to be there until Bobek came in.
Yeah.
And then you can get a Knighton at guard, and hopefully, knock on wood, Scoggins gets another year.
Yeah.
If not, you look at a guy like Meeker to play guard. But they still, to me, it would not surprise me if they go out and they look for two or three grad transfers or one or two, and maybe a couple JUCO kids too.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be out there quite a bit, and it would not surprise me if their commitments get up to close to 30.
I think with the JUCO thing, I think they're just being selective, you know, because we've heard a couple different names of guys that they've targeted, but then it sounds like they've kind of backed off on those guys.
Yeah.
So, like, after that. So I just don't know.
I don't either.
They just might not be able to find that guy that they want.
Well, I mean, that's a tough position too, because I understand why they're going out and they're trying to find some JUCO players at other positions too. The cupboard's bare at certain spots, but man, I bet you in a couple of years they hope not to have to. I mean, one or two a year, maybe as a plug and play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't want to be in the JUCO game a whole lot. Unless, well, if you do, you can get selective maybe and try to get Ray Lima, who's a top 50 recruit or something like that.
Yeah, and speaking of Ray Lima, it sounds like he's taking a visit to TCU this weekend. Gary Patterson was in to visit him earlier this week. So,
Gary Patterson, you SOB. So the big, keeping Cam White from Ole Miss and keeping Ray Lima from TCU are probably the, I would say,
well, at least with Lima, that's only got a little bit of time left.
Yeah.
Because he's going to sign here in the next couple weeks.
But at the same time, that could be, hey, he changes his mind last second and you don't have a chance to re-get him back onto Iowa State too. There's two ways to look at that.
Right.
I think
I can't remember what day it is for sure, but there's a dead period that comes here in the next couple days, in the next week or so.
And see, since he's a mid-year guy, I mean, you sell to him, and you don't like to give just anybody a spot, but he would come in, he would start.
Yeah.
He would start. You look at it, Vernell
Trent. Did you see Camillo's highlight tape?
Yeah, he's a stud.
Yeah, dude.
He's a big boy. Yeah, I mean, or, you know, those defensive tackles, they rotate in so much. I think first and second team, it's you flip a coin. You're playing a lot of snaps in the 12. But both of those guys would play. Be him, Vernell Trent, Jamal Johnson,
and Camillo. Yeah.
You know, maybe Josh Bailey comes in ready to play. But Iowa State has to keep the two JUCO guys. And I think they have to keep Cam White because I think Cam White's just one of those guys who just looks good for Iowa State to get.
Well, this is something that CW and I were talking about the other day with Cam White. What position do you think he's going to play?
Whatever the hell they want to put him at.
Well, I kind of compared him to like a Jabril Peppers.
I compared him to that last week on the podcast.
Okay, then I piggybacked off yours and stole it then.
Yeah, I mean, we're not trying to say he's
but then
be Jabril
C-Dub
Peppers.
He was like
a five star. You know,
he was like, how do you even figure that? And I was like, well, he'll start at safety, and then he gets a little bit bigger, then maybe he can move to linebacker, and then he can just put him all over the field.
You can put the kid wherever you want.
Yeah,
you can put him wherever you want. You know, who knows? I don't know if he's quite as fast as Peppers would be, but, I mean, you could put him safety, linebacker.
It's crazy to think that Peppers only has one career interception.
Yeah.
But we talk him up like he's the second coming.
It's because they use him in about 18 different ways. And he's good. He's a good football player. But I don't think we'll be using Cam White on offense, though. What do you think about him
being a Heisman finalist over that guy from Alabama, Jonathan Allen? Do you agree with that?
I didn't know he was.
Yeah.
Jabril Peppers. Does it really matter? Lamar Jackson's going to win it, so everything else is irrelevant to me. Did I see, though, that D.D. Westbrook's up there, too?
Yeah, it's D.D. Westbrook and Baker Mayfield both are.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, it's Jackson, Watson, Westbrook, Mayfield, and Peppers.
No Browning?
No.
Huh. Who else would even – who got – you know, who should have got it that got kind of –
Well, I would say that guy, Jonathan Allen from Alabama.
Okay.
He would be a guy that's in the conversation. Browning's obviously in the conversation.
The USC quarterback, Darnold.
What about that Adoree Jackson from USC?
Could have been.
I'm sure people at Ohio State would try and say JT Barrett should be in that conversation, I wouldn't say so.
No, JT Barrett's a little overrated, in my opinion. No, I think that's fair, I guess. D.D. Westbrook, I'm glad they put him in. He's a stud.
I wouldn't be surprised if he finished second.
D.D.?
Yeah.
That's the bigger of the races, right? I mean, obviously you want the Heisman, but the bigger question. You know who's going to win. Lamar Jackson's going to win. It's not even going to be close. Yeah. Probably one of the biggest landslides ever in Heisman history. So who's going to get second? You say D.D.?
Yeah. Is it just me or I feel like there wasn't even that many guys that were like Heisman
Watson might get
worthy,
second because he's Watson.
You know?
No, you're right. I care less and
like
less
every
about
year
that
it seems
year.
Like yeah every year it seems like it's just there's fewer and fewer guys that you're like debating like they could win the Heisman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree. I used to really care about it, and I used to, you know, sit there and write down the names when I was a kid as far as who I would have, and I'd rate them, you know, top 5. All I know this year, and everybody I've watched, Lamar Jackson has got to be the winner. And he had a couple stinker games.
There's just been too many years where it's like you look at the list and it's like it's got to be this guy. But then he doesn't win. And it's like, well, that's a joke.
Name a year. I want to hear a year.
2009.
Who?
Ndamukong Suh should have been the Heisman Trophy winner.
Who won it over him?
Wasn't it Mark Ingram?
Was it Mark? I don't remember.
I think it was.
You're the Nebraska fan.
Well, I think it was Mark Ingram.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Mark Ingram's had a nice NFL career. He's a good player. What's wrong with Mark
Ingram? But what does your NFL career matter? Should be who was the best player in college football that year?
Ndamukong Suh was one of the top five most dominant college football players I've ever seen in my life. Dominant.
And he didn't win the Heisman Trophy.
Defensive players don't win it, though. I mean,
but then it shouldn't be an award. It shouldn't be the most outstanding player in college football. Then it's got to be. It should be the most outstanding offensive player.
It should be the most valuable player. And for the most part, most people.
Then how can you say that it wasn't Sue? He made that whole defense.
No, because most people look at it and say, "Well, what did that team go that year? 9-3?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. How many?
He single-handedly almost won them the Big 12 championship game.
He almost did, but they lost. Right? But they lost.
I don't want to talk about it.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, though. I mean, how many 9-3 winners have won it? I mean, there have been some. There have been some quarterbacks that have won it with the team.
I'm just saying that.
Typically, they don't.
And I'm not saying that is just the only year, because there's a lot of different people that I think can point at a lot of years where it's like, this guy shouldn't have won.
Yeah, it's so subjective. You know, everyone's got their opinion on it. I guarantee a lot of people down in the SEC probably thought Mark Ingram should have won it.
Well, that's the reason that he did. So.
Yeah. And they went undefeated that year, right? Alabama went undefeated, and then they beat Texas in the championship game.
Yeah.
That was when Colt McCoy got knocked out.
Well, yeah.
The beginning of the end for Texas. They've been terrible ever since.
Well, because I think that even Colt McCoy finished he finished second, maybe. Here, I'm pulling it up. Yeah, it was Ingram, Gerhardt, McCoy, Sue, and Tebow were the top five.
Hmm. Tebow should have won it.
That's like a lot of people voted before the conference championship games.
They lost, though. They lost the game. They lost.
You just told me he was one of the five most dominant players in college football history.
Yeah. Dominant. Just absolutely tore everyone apart.
It didn't matter if it was double teams, triple teams. He was
he was a stud. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just what I'm trying to say.
You're a little biased.
No. Well, I know that I'm biased, but I'm just trying to say that that is the year that I look at that award and it lost credibility with me. That's when it changed from being who is the best player in college football to who wins the popularity contest.
Well, so Iowa State fans go back to when Troy Davis lost it.
And I'd say the same thing. Troy Davis should have won.
I mean, I'm an Iowa State fan. I'm not sure he should have won it. We were terrible. We won three games.
But then, okay, so is it the award for the best player on the best team?
Best player on one of the best teams.
It's just like the NBA MVP. Is the MVP the best player on the best team? Is that who it has to be?
No, I think you have to, like,
because
the
NBA, then by that logic, Russell Westbrook will have no chance to be the MVP.
There should be criteria, right? You should in college. You should at least have 8 wins. If your team doesn't have 8 wins, you shouldn't have a chance to win the Heisman. And in the NBA, you got to at least make the playoffs. At least make the play. If you don't make the playoffs, you can't be an MVP.
But I don't think that there's ever been a guy that won the MVP that was like that finished that didn't have his team be in like the top three in his conference.
Oh, I bet they're right. Yeah, there have been top three for sure.
Three or four. You would be surprised. I guarantee you would be surprised.
Well, I guess we'll have to go back and look at this afterwards.
We will. We will, because you're going to be surprised when you look at them. I was listening to a podcast just the other day that broke this down, and they listed them back, and it's like, geez, every single one of these guys won 60 games.
Who in your lifetime has won MVP where you just don't agree that he should have won MVP? I mean, every year, right? Every year for the last 7 years, LeBron James has been the best player in the NBA.
Right.
And he's won, what, 3 times?
Yeah. I'd say there was that one year that, maybe Steph's first year, I would say that Harden could have won.
Yeah, Harden could have won.
His team wasn't that good, and that's why he didn't win.
And he doesn't play a lick of defense.
Yeah.
Kobe one time lost to Steve Nash, and Kobe's numbers were phenomenal.
Well, think about there was that year that Karl Malone won.
Yeah.
And it should have – I mean, Michael was out, like, was on another planet, but they didn't give it to him because Michael had been good for so long already.
You expect it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the best player in the NBA award. It's the MVP of the season. And at that time, the guy who was the most valuable player to their team was Karl Malone. You look at what the Bulls did when Jordan left with Pippen. They were still pretty damn good. I think they finished like second in the East. You know?
But they weren't championship winners.
No, they weren't. They weren't.
Karl Malone never won a championship anyway.
No one's going to argue with you who the best player is. Like, that's a completely different thing. I always think.
This is such a tired argument.
This argument happens every year.
I know that. I just don't get why then the award is defined that way. If that's not what it really is, you know?
I mean, but everyone really knows what it is, right? We're just arguing over semantics as far as what, you know, what the reading of the actual thing is. Would it be better if instead of the Heisman, it was called the Most Valuable Player for the Best Team Award? Would that make you happy?
Yes, it would.
Okay, I'm gonna.
But no, it's not even like that. It's like it.
I mean, we know that's the reason.
Like,
we know
that
the
actual. I want to know what the actual parameters of the Heisman Trophy is. What is it that you have to do to be the Heisman Trophy winner?
Okay, so this is no different than the Final Four for football. Everyone wants to know what is the perfect criteria? What is the criteria they're looking for? I don't blame the committee. There's no way you can ever give that.
Well,
out.
No, I think the committee did good this year.
I think they were fine.
I think a lot of it should come down. It's at the end of the day, it's an eye test. It's like a subjective thing. It's not can't be objective, you know. But like, I don't get why it's branded that way. That it's like, oh, this is the best player in college football. But even though a lot of people watch the games, and it's like that guy wasn't the best player in college football. You get what I mean?
But everyone's gonna disagree on the best player. Just like everyone right now disagrees on who should have been the fourth. So a lot of people don't.
But everybody right now agrees that Lamar Jackson's the best player.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson put up some stupid numbers this year, though, and there's no one else that was really close. So, I mean, that this year makes it just like everybody thinks that Alabama's by far and away the best team in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
But some years people might disagree. Every year is different. Every year is different.
We went way off topic for a really long time.
Nothing
there.
To do with recruiting there at all. Yeah, off topic for sure. What
the Heisman Trophy's stupid. That's my final thought.
I guarantee you, you didn't think it was stupid when Eric Crouch won it.
Well, I was 7 years old, yep. So no.
No, you thought I was cool then, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I was 7 years old.
Okay. Just calling you out for the hypocrite that you are.
I was 7 years old. I wasn't old enough to even form my own opinion. Back then, I still watched SportsCenter.
Who on the list here is Iowa State most likely to get a commitment out of? I mean, obviously, Richard Bowens is already committed. Who would you rank on there between we got Connor Robbins, Rich Bowens has already committed, Hunter Knighton, Andrew Ward, and Caleb Chandler. Who's most likely to commit this weekend when they're here?
Connor Robbins. That's what I'd say.
Just because he's got the least offers?
I mean, it seems like it would make sense. Just based on the other offers that he has and the other school Iowa State's going up against.
I'm gonna say Hunter Knighton. Just because he is a grad transfer.
That one's another one. That's what I would say number two.
Yeah, I'd say Hunter Knighton. Just, you know, like I said, he's going to be here early in January, so he's going to want to make the decision quick. Here's my question. A kid grad transfers, right? He's going from Miami to Ames. Does Iowa State pay for his travel up here? Do like they hire him a moving truck and move all of his furniture up here for him, or is he responsible for that himself?
I have no idea.
Do they pay for him to fly up here once a year?
Or does he pay for it. The school pays for your official visit, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, official visit, but then what, is he going to stay here forever after that? I mean, he's got to go back home and finish up school. I mean, that's a long.
But how's that any different than any kid that has to come?
No,
to
I know. That's what I've school. Always. I've always wondered. Right, this kid too is older. He's not. He's not going to be in a dorm. He's going to have an apartment.
Yeah.
He probably has, you know, some furniture, or does Iowa State just provide him a fully furnished apartment?
I can't imagine. No.
I want to know the details on this. This is another question. Write this down. Kind of like we did with Neil Berry at the end of football recruiting. Hopefully, we'll get a member of the staff on for a podcast. I want to ask him that question. What do these kids do that have been in other schools? They've started to accumulate some stuff. They're almost an adult. What do they do with all their stuff? Do they drive here? Is he driving from Miami to Ames, Iowa? It's a 28-hour drive.
It is a 28-hour. Is it 28 hours? You know exactly how much?
It's probably 28 hours. I've made the drive to Florida enough. It's probably 26 maybe. I'll look this up here. Yeah, these are things that I think about.
I'm looking at Heisman Trophy winners right now.
Oh,
sorry.
Let's move on from that, please.
Sorry, I kind of got the Heisman on my mind with Rashawn Salaam passing away.
Are we going to talk about the Iowa State basketball team at all today?
Yeah, we can. We got about 7 minutes left.
24 hours.
Until we hit our max. So, yeah, if he wants to drive 24 hours without stopping.
Oh, we did it growing up. You'll love this story. The Grays, all six of us and the parents, we had eight of us in a van. And my dad put a couple empty milk jugs in there and said, boys, we're not stopping. So if you got to go, here you go. And we stopped, I think, three times just to fill up with gas and the whole way down, 24 hours. My dad drove straight through them.
Did you even get out of the car?
Yeah, when we actually stopped to fill up with gas, I'd get out and go. But yeah, other than that.
Where were you going?
Port Charlotte. My grandparents had a house down there.
Thought maybe you were going to Disney World.
Nope. I think did my parents take us to Disney? I went to Disney World once growing up. I did.
Did you like it?
Nah, I was never a big Disney fan.
Yeah, I went there when I was little. I wasn't a fan either.
That's okay. It's crowded.
Universal Studios was better.
I would agree. But basketball, Cincinnati game.
Yeah.
Anything good to say about that game?
No. Pretty good defense.
Yeah.
Except for the rebounding.
Yeah. I try not to be the person that overreacts, so I won't. I mean, I don't think you can hang on one game as far as what Iowa State can or can't do. Obviously, yeah. I think rebounding is going to be a problem all year unless Merrill Holden can finally step up and stay out of foul trouble and get the rebounds. Otherwise, Iowa State's going to have problems rebounding. But I think that's fine. I think Iowa State can get away with that for the most part if they learn
how to score. You can get away with it as long as you're not giving up 20 offensive rebounds.
20's a lot.
Well, they gave up 18 last night to Omaha.
Yeah. You know, Omaha gave up or had 19 or 20 against Iowa, too, so they're pretty good at crashing the glass.
Yeah.
But still, it's not. I mean, that's not a good number. Iowa State's got to be better than that,
right? But even, it obviously didn't matter.
But that wasn't the reason they lost to Cincinnati, in my opinion. They gave up all these offensive rebounds and they scored points off that, where Cincinnati wasn't scoring any in their half court. But really, it came down to is when Iowa State was in a half court setting, they didn't move the ball, they didn't push it, they just did all ISO stuff. And this is not an ISO team.
Well, and that's the thing that kind of bothered me. After last night's game, there was a lot of people that were like, well, the reason that they were better offensively is because they played Omaha. It's like,
which is true.
It's true, but at the same time, that
and they got more stops.
They
got turnovers.
Moved the ball better than they did against Cincinnati.
They moved the ball a lot better. Now my question is going to be, when we won't see it again in the non-conference. Iowa State doesn't play a good defensive team until Big 12 play starts.
Yeah.
So they're not probably going to struggle to score at all until conference play goes again. But the book's going to be out on Burton, right? Mm-hmm. He can't go right, or he refuses to go right for the most part. And he likes, if you just sag off him a little bit, he'll shoot. And when he's on fire like he was the starter last night's game, he's almost impossible to guard. But when he's off, then all of a sudden he'll keep chucking it, and you're fine. And then Iowa State doesn't have anybody else that's really an ISO guy. So they have to move the ball. They have to figure out ways to score points by moving the ball. Hopefully the Cincinnati game was kind of a wake-up call to him. Do you agree with that? Do you agree with my take on Burton too?
Yeah, I do. I don't know. Like I said, I thought they moved the ball a lot better than they had, even in those games, not just Cincinnati, even in those games leading up to that. You know, shared it better.
The three games down in Florida, they didn't share the ball at all down there.
Well, and they got caught too much standing and watching each other. That's the thing I don't like about Burton, is when he gets the ball, everybody just stands and watches him.
Because they know he's not going to pass it for the most part.
Yeah. And that's the thing that he has to be able to do if he's going to be able to be. Really a big-time impact player.
And when we drive and kick, can we throw a pass to a guy's the shooter's chest, please?
Yeah.
How many times are we throwing the ball down at their ankles?
A lot.
It's driving me crazy. Throw the ball at their chest.
Iowa State's one of the worst teams in the country in passing or catch-and-shoot situations.
Are they? Where do you find the stat at?
Somebody told me that. Somebody with, like, a Synergy account.
Well, that's because right now they're not doing a whole lot of it. Last night was better. It probably will help their percentages out. They'll get better at it, but if the Iowa State's going to be as good as we both thought they can be or we're going to be at the beginning of the season, it has to be them driving and kicking. Has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Naz, I think Naz, he'll come along on the threes.
I think they're going to run more sets than they have previously as well.
They're going to have to.
Well, and it's actually interesting to listen to Coach Prohm. I kind of want to ask him about what his like offensive philosophy is early on in the season, because he talks about how much freedom he gives them. I want to know, does he just not even put any sets in, like, for a while? And then he's like, all right, we've come to the point where this is not going to work. Now we're doing it my way.
Got to run some stuff here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that's kind of what they did last night.
Well, I mean, like I said, Burton is he's a matchup problem for a lot of teams. But you always knew if you gave the ball to Niang, you know, Niang would make some stupid turnovers, but he'd also find some guys for some great looks too.
Definitely.
And Burton's done a couple. He's had a couple nice passes, but he hasn't done it to the consistency of George. So that's hurting this team right now too. But they're going to be okay. The Cincinnati game was as mad as I've been watching an Iowa State game in a long time. I don't think that Cincinnati team's that good. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think Ed Hill had any business beating us. I thought we should have won by 12.
Well, and that's what, they got to halftime, and the Cincinnati had a 1-point lead, and it's like, it felt like Iowa State dominated that first half.
I thought, okay, we'll win this game by 8 or 9. I wasn't worried at all.
I wasn't worried until
overtime.
I wasn't even worried in overtime. They got the ball on that last possession, and I was like, there is no way that they lose this game. I like looked at Rob, and I was like, somebody's going to hit a shot here because there's no way they're losing.
Yeah.
And then the last possession happened, and it was just awful.
Just kind of like the Gonzaga game.
Yeah. Except they had 20 seconds to run off the clock instead of just five.
Yeah. Well, but Iowa State, I mean, the last four or five possessions of that Gonzaga game were settling for shots. And
Yeah,
they'll figure it out. They'll be good. They're not going to lose a game again for the non-conference. They'll go. They'll beat Iowa. Although Iowa's going to be tricky just because it is a rivalry game and they have kids from Iowa. I think that matters. I don't know. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I agree.
I think Iowa State, Monte and Naz and Matt, they played in this game four times, so they're kind of getting a taste of it. Iowa kids grow up with it.
I don't think that those guys are going to, in the long run, are going to make like a huge impact like nationally. But they're in this particular game, I think, yes, that's one where that factor plays a big role.
Yeah, no, I do. Yeah. I mean, I thought it did when, Woodbury and Gazelle and those guys were there too. I think having more Iowa State doesn't have any Iowa kids on the team, unless you count Wes Greeter. Do you count him?
No.
You don't? Okay.
Stu made two free throws last night. Did you see that?
If that three was down.
It wasn't a three. It was actually a long two.
Was it?
But yeah.
Stu's got to know.
He traveled before he shot it,
too. He might have. But. He got a little quick. He got a little antsy. Those size 18s, he's got to get them behind the line. I want three. You know what I found really funny about that, too, by the way?
We got to finish this up here pretty quick, just so you know.
Okay. When he was shooting those free throws and he made it and they're showing everyone on the bench, Simeon Carter was like laughing and going crazy. And I'm sitting there thinking, Simeon, you're the same as Stu, man. Like, when you get in there, I go crazy when you score, too. Because when was the last time you scored a bucket? Like, quit making fun of Stu on the side there. Why don't you get in there and score some points? Yeah.
Adam versus Simeon.
Throwing a little shade at Simeon right there. But, I cracked me up. I'm like, God, he was going over the top.
Did you see my tweet last night? I thought people were over the top.
They're over
with the way they were acting
about
Stu.
Way over the top. Yeah.
There were people chanting for Stu to come in the game with, 8 minutes left.
I mean, I know this is an Iowa State tradition, and we did it with way back with Hester, and I get it. But it, to me, it. Do you think he gets embarrassed by it a little bit?
I would. Wouldn't you?
And if you're Greeter, are you a little pissed off that you're getting no love and it's all for Stu?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. By the way, Wes, make a free throw, man.
Wouldn't you be kind of embarrassed by that?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just everybody's acknowledging that you're not that good.
I mean, he's a walk-on, though. So, I think you got to understand, too. I mean, it's not like he's a scholarship player you're cheering for, right? He's a walk-on. So, I think he can have fun with it. And if they just chanted Stu and they left it there and they cheered. But, man, even the players on the side, to me, are going
but
over
he makes,
the top.
He makes a free throw, and it's like I tweeted last night. I can't tell if Iowa State just won the national championship or Stu made a free throw.
Yeah. Oh, they went crazy. And you see Simeon on the side, and he's just going, oh, he's going crazy. And I'm like, geez, if you made a free throw, I'd probably be doing the same thing right now. When was the last time you made a free throw? Stu's outscoring you.
Well, it's funny. Coach Prohm got asked about Stu in the postgame press conference.
Did he? What did he say?
And he said, he was like, man, he went out there and drilled those two free throws, man. He's like, if somebody ever gets hurt and they get fouled and they got to go to the free throw line, the other team gets to pick who's going to shoot him. He's like, man, if they pick him, he's going to go out there and sink those, man.
That's a pretty good Steve impression right there.
I don't have the Southern draw with it, though.
That's tough. It's tough to pull off.
All right. You got anything else? Oh, wait. You better talk about the exercise coach real quick.
Oh, yeah. No. Just thanks again to the exercise coach for sponsoring the podcast, On the Trail podcast. Stop in, see them. Tell them Cyclone Fanatics sent you 4 free workouts. Costs you absolutely nothing. You'll get a great workout. You'll love it. Then you'll end up signing up because it works. Give them a call, 515-330-1299, or stop in. They're right off Mill Civic, 4800 Mill Civic Parkway, Suite 107.
Your Cy-Hawk prediction?
I'll say Iowa State by 9. I think the spread's going to be 7.5. Be interested to see it, but I'm going to go 7.5.
I got Iowa State by 10.
Yep. I think it's going to be close for the majority of the game. Iowa State's got experienced players, and at the end of the game, that'll matter.
There we go.
Hey, quick question. Merrill Holden, does he have 2 fouls within the first minute and a half or over under in 1.5 before he picks up a second foul?
Take the over.
Man. That Pemsel, man. Pemsel's going to get him in foul trouble like that.
Man. Yeah, I guess. Maybe.
But here's the thing, too. Holden's got 5 years in this kid. 4 or 5. He, right? He should be able to handle
himself. Well, the thing that kind of sucks for Merrill Holden is that they changed a lot of the rules about how you can play post defense. Kind of the change of the emphasis of him.
He's had some ticky-tack fouls.
Yeah.
Him. Last night.
But that was one of the things when we went to the Big 12 Media Day and they did their – and Curtis Shaw did his presentation where he talks about the emphasis for the officials.
Yeah.
That was the first thing they talked about was in post defense. When you see – when they'll call those fouls for guys on offense like trying to back somebody down, that was literally one they showed 10 different clips. This is a foul now. Every time they showed that.
Yeah.
And so when they call that, I'm like, and people are like, that's not a foul, that's not a foul. No, they literally, this has been something that they've been talking about for months, is they're going to call this a foul.
And Merrill is what? He's got to be 22, yeah. 23. I mean, he's an older veteran guy. He should be able to pick up on this, right? Because we watched him early on. I thought he's going to be a really nice player for Iowa State, and he still can be, but you can't be a nice player when you're on the bench the whole game.
Yeah.
You got to stay out of foul trouble.
He was like 0 for 1 with two rebounds against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
That's your starting five man.
Yeah. You can't have that.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be in foul trouble, just rebound the ball. Like I've said many times, I don't care if Merrill Holden scores 0 points for us. He's got to play defense. He's got to rebound the ball.
Definitely. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks, Adam. Thanks again to the exercise coach, and everybody have a great weekend.